My name is Verena Kurka and I cordially welcome you into this podcast today, Neue Musik Leben. I have studied classical singing, but now I sing lots of contemporary and experimental music. And if you would like to know more about me, please look at my website, www.irenekurka.de. I also cordially welcome you to subscribe to my monthly newsletter. In this podcast, I talk about all around themes around the new music world. I share with you the insights, the behind the scenes, and I really want you to bring the human beings out of this great world closer to you. And I hope to inspire you and even to empower you. And I thank you so much for all your great feedbacks that, tell me which direction to go, what do you really appreciate here, and also where I have touched and reached you or even motivated you to do certain things. I'm very, very thankful for all of that. I'm cooperating with the NMZ, that is the Neue Musik Zeitung, which is one of the most important German music papers, and you could also subscribe to it online. And I'm excited that there's so many great things going on, that this podcast is growing, that people listen to it really worldwide. I mean, we're coming into our seventh year, and if you would have told me that when I started, probably I would have not believed you. And somehow it grew so organic. I didn't do a lot. I just follow my impulses, my ideas, and suddenly we're here, and I'm really thankful for that. I'm also thankful that it happens that people listen to this podcast and then they also go to my website or listen to tracks by me where I sing on YouTube or my website, and then they even contact me if they want to work with me. And the cool thing is, the people who have listened to this podcast and then contact me to work with me, it's usually a match, because I think you know me so well and you already know if I'm the person for you or not. And if you then reach out to me, it's usually really, really amazing. And so in a way, even though I'm here sitting by myself and speaking into the microphone, we're quite close. And I'm also very thankful that now for a few months already, I have voice students from all over. And it's possible with all this online technology. So I'm really excited. I'm excited to sing in Athens this year, in Luxembourg, in Graz, and all great cities in Germany. So maybe I see you at some place. So today we have a great guest in this episode. Today I'm talking with the composer and professor Irene Galindo Quero.
Hello. Hello, Irene Galindo Quero. I cordially welcome you into my podcast, Neue Musik Leben, today.
Hello, Irene. Nice to have someone with the same name.
And thank you. That's also exciting for me. I don't know if this is a typical name in Spain, but in Germany, my parents, you asked me about that, they're Czech. So they gave me this name because I think it's more common over there. And also in Czech tradition, they always give the oldest son the name of the father and the oldest daughter the name of the mother. So my grandmother's name is also Irene, and so on. But when I was a child, I knew no one whose name was Irene, and I always thought I had a weird name. And I only met then people who were like older than me who had my name. And when I figured out that we are the goddess of peace, I thought like, okay, this is an amazing name.
Definitely. It's a good meaning, isn't it?
How's it in Spain? Is it a common name or?
No, it's more and more common. I think by the time my parents named me, this is because they're both classicists and they really liked the meaning of the name. Irene used to be our goddess. And yeah, I think now it's relatively common, but in Germany I've heard it's more like an old lady's name, which is also nice. So yeah, no, but I really stand by my name. I do like it very much.
Yeah, great. Well, it's so nice to have you here today. And you're in Bern, I'm in Düsseldorf. And first, I would like to know from you, how did you find your way into this new and experimental music scene and music?
Yeah, so these are two different questions. My way into the experimental music, also called Neue Musik, was completely blind. It was a blind step. And when I think back, I'm quite surprised myself because I just enrolled in the conservatory to study composition after I finished high school, and nothing pointed into that direction, actually. I was a very good student in science. Everyone expected me to do some kind of physics or engineering studies, and it was not very welcome, my decision to do music. But I got it started developing when I was a teenager. Like, I think for it's the case for many people that I started taking music more and more seriously, something that was present in my life since the age of six. Started violin, and 2 years later with the piano. And I was not a particularly good, I know I was not particularly talented, I must say, with music. And funnily enough, I chose that as my vocation. Maybe because I saw it also as some kind of challenge. No, I was good in school, it was easy, and this was more challenging in a way. Yeah, I started being more and more intrigued by music, especially after having my first harmony lessons. We have a very good system in Spain, I must say, of the conservatory, the public conservatory, 4 years that you start at the age of eight and then 6 years. And in this time, you also get quite a good foundation in harmony. And I started doing my first compositions just on that year that I also had my Abitur, like the last year of high school. And I really fully went for it without really knowing what contemporary music was. I did mention Schoenberg at the Aufnahmeprüfung, at the entry exams, with the hope that they wouldn't ask much more. But I'm really not a very impulsive person, but I had the strong intuition that I must do something that fulfills me in life, and that path will be through music. And I felt somehow very close to rhythm music, more than to the stage somehow. So this is what took me there.
And so when you went to the conservatory, it suddenly opened up this world and you got to know all those, I don't know, great
Yeah.
composer, great pieces.
It was quite a shock, to be honest, because I was an avid reader and I was familiarized also with art, but I did not know about the existence really of new music. So I just decided to give myself some time. I think I thought back then I'll give myself a year, because in the beginning everything sounded very similar, which is I think it's a good experience now to think about that helps me a lot to think about the audience for new music, because I was myself at that position. And I just gave myself some time. I thought, okay, I'm just going to completely immerse myself into this world, listen as much as possible, attend as many live concerts as possible, which was challenging because we didn't have so many possibilities in South Spain. But I did some extra trips to Madrid. I remember I went to see Lachenmann String Quartets with Arditti back in 2005 or something like that, or 2004 maybe. And I attended the Darmstadt Ferienkurse. And then I did slowly find my way there. Also, it was very important to meet Mauricio Kagel, who did come to Granada back then and presented one concert. And I started to slowly find some true closeness to this world, and then I decided to stay. So
Oh, that's
that was,
amazing to jump
yeah.
into something you didn't really know.
No, it's strange somehow. It is actually strange. Yeah.
So something just pulled you there. What I also find interesting when you mentioned that were good in science, I think there's some musicians who are also good at science or math. I also have been very good at math, and I could have studied it, but for me it was like to be occupied later on, I don't know, 8 hours or so a day with math. I could not imagine it. I'm like, no, this is not nice. But I could imagine myself being occupied 8 hours at least with music. And so this is why I also choose to study music.
And I think vocation, things like that happen in a very uncontrollable way. Like, parents of the world, be aware that some of these so-called hobbies for your kids, if they get like the bee sting at some point in their life, it's difficult to shake that away. It's good, I think. But I think this comes also unexpectedly, you know, in life.
And I also read in your on your website that you also were into literature and languages. So you have a very wide knowledge about things, not just music.
Yeah, well, the science part, I think, is very much forgotten. But literature definitely plays an important role in my life.
Mm-hmm. And then it also accumulates in music theater, right? Because you also write on your page that you like doing music theater a lot.
Yeah,
what definitely. Is the fascination about it, or what draws you to music theater?
Yeah, both music theater and also I work very, very closely with my very good friend, the Spanish poet Ángela Segovia. And well, first, maybe I'll mention that we've been friends and collaborators for a long time, for more than 10 years now. And I think sharing the creative process with someone so closely has been, I'm just very lucky for that experience. And sometimes I wonder, why is that the case? It's of course something, again, uncontrollable, that you meet someone that you just have this this common path with, so to say. But it's also interesting, I think, that I found literature in general such an important light, so to say, in my life. And I think it's also not a coincidence that it's not music, because sometimes one needs to step out a little bit to re-encounter things in their own terrain. It happens, I think, also with the place that one comes from. Sometimes one understands much better the homeland or after stepping out, no? Like, I think I got to know much better South Spain, where I come from, Granada, Andalusia. I got a better understanding from my own place after stepping out of there. That's something.
Yeah, that happens very often. I mean, I also did study in the United States and in Canada, and it changed my perspective to Germany, and I could appreciate certain things even more. And I mean, you're still, on your way somehow. I mean, you're in Berlin, you're in Bern, you are Spanish.
Yeah. So definitely same, I think, with literature and music. I think the stepping out of my home, which is supposed to be music, and helps me a lot to actually understand music better. And in the case of music theater, it was a very early discovery, so to say, like in the beginning. What I mean with early discovery is that at the same time that I was discovering what new music was at all, I had this encounter with Mauricio Kagel and his music, and I was just fascinated. It was I could not imagine that music could be somehow an instrument to expand these ways of narrating and finding new forms also. It opened up completely also the concept of form and the expectations of a normal concert setup. The weights also of image and music, and not necessarily being then music background to an image or the theater project, but also to play around with those switches and those hierarchies. I always found that very exciting.
Mm-hmm. And since you also write for music theater, you also write for voice, and I'm a singer, so I'm always curious, how's it for you to write for voice? Because for some composers, it's easy, some of them sing themselves, and some are also kind of afraid of writing for voice. How's it for you?
It is extremely challenging, because it's just basically so human, right? And at the same time, there is also this maybe romanticized image that all music comes somehow from an imitation of the voice, right? I also learn Indian classical music, and it's interesting that this concept is shared also in that music, you know, that somehow all instrumental music departs from this kind of imitation of the human voice. I don't know if that's true, that cannot be proven, but there's something in the human voice that is just charged with so many more things than the pure sound, I think. I've been always a big fan of Leos Janacek music, and his whole theory of speech and music has influenced me enormously. Like, I always found it also extremely sweet, the idea that he would walk around recording conversations from, I mean, not recording back then, sorry, transcribing. And he had this this tool that he developed himself, to, like a kind of, how do you say in English, Stoppuhr, like a chronometer, no?
Clockwatch. I think it's a
yeah.
clockwatch.
Clockwatch, yeah, okay. Yeah, and that because he truly believed that there is just so much information in the way we say things, not just about what do we say, but how do we say that. And thanks to that also, we can have irony, for instance, or we can detect lies, and we can be also playful around that. Like, it is really not the same. If I think there is this example of he just paying attention to these women at a train station waiting for someone to arrive, and one of them saying in a very normal, neutral tone, so to say, oh, it seems it's running late, and the other one saying nervously, but trying to sound like uninterested, he probably won't come. And there is so much emotional information there. Of if I tell you now, I'm so happy to see you, it's really not the same. So I'm interested in all that partly unconscious also information and deeply emotional information contained into spoken language. And you ask me actually about writing for voice, but I think listening to voices and transcribing myself a lot of spoken and sung voices has been so present in my writing, also in the instrumental writing, that I would say has been really central. And then particularly on writing for voice, yeah, it's really challenging. I had this each of them very different experiences writing for chamber opera contexts. Like my first one was in Madrid, where I could choose my own cast, and I had a mixture of only music singers and lyric singers, opera singers. And then with the opera studio in Hamburg, the Opera Stabile, and then also in Berlin in the Tischlerei. And it's been every time a completely different experience. But yeah, I do feel definitely very close to the voice.
Yeah, it's so many interesting points you touched on. I mean, what we transport with speaking and just also how we're speaking now. And this is also why I enjoy those podcast talks so much. Or this is also the feedback I get from the listeners, that we can take time. Not sometimes in radios, things are very cut and edited. And I feel that whatever else is, whatever swinging with us is also transporting, and not just the pure information. And with singing voices, yeah, I mean, I'm also fascinated by any colleague I hear, because everyone is so different, how they use their voice, what they transport, how they use their body. And yeah, it's very individual, I think. I mean, no singer is like another. Everyone is so, so special. And I mean, you also mentioned, I think that probably was it on your website, that music meets language. So this is just what you were talking about, or is there more to this?
Yeah, this is what I was trying to describe. And yeah, I guess back then, because I was maybe first enthusiastic reader of literature before I was a proper listener. That's something that I've been developing more and more later on in life. But I guess the first aesthetical experience was more through literature. When I started composing, I also departed from more like, let's say, technical or analytical aspects of literature. And I always found it fascinating how we both could say that we both words have a syntax, but what we mean with metrics is something different. What we mean, this is also why, actually, yeah, you went to my website, which is really not good, but it's true that there is a sentence standing there. And I think I left it there because it was crucial for me to notice how we refer with the same words to something that is close enough, but actually sometimes not really convergent. So yeah. Yeah.
And when you work with the interpreters, what do you appreciate most in them?
Do you mean with singers or in general with interpreters?
It can be all interpreters, or you can distinguish however you want to answer.
Yeah. No, I really, that was so enjoyable when I first arrived to Freiburg to study, that I didn't have that chance in Spain at first. And that was suddenly a whole new world. I do really enjoy so much working directly with people and with the musicians. And I still do that. It's like this summer I had the chance to also meet, for the last piece I wrote, a trio for the Trio Amos in Vienna. That was just premiered now in Wien Modern. You know, after many years, one could think like, okay, I've been 20 years writing music. I know these instruments. I have like slowly collected my own dictionary. But every time I did go to Michael Moser's place in Vienna, we all met. And it was just fantastic to have hours and hours of recordings. I don't always have the chance to do that, but I do really enjoy doing it because it's really an exploration that is done very differently when it's done with other people, and if you have the luxus of having that time. And then on the other hand, after the solitude of the process of writing the music, it's just always it's always so exciting to then get back to the rehearsal phase and be able to materialize that, or to allow that music to manifest, so to say. And that only happens together, no? With the... It's interesting because I've been always thinking about it a lot recently, that the notation of my music is really so insufficient that I really do need this time to closely work with the musicians. I still didn't find a way to convey on written music exactly what I want. And I don't know if in 10 years, if I see you and we talk about this again, if I could tell you, okay, I did find something that was missing in the notation. But actually, I tend to believe that there is something that can be only communicated while working together, actually. So, yeah, which is very much about the sonic experience. In the end, there is some element of oralty to that, I believe. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can feel you with that too, because I always feel when I interpret music, and then there are the rehearsals, or even the first rehearsal with the composer, and even if the composer is just in the room and maybe she has not even said a word, it already changes something. And I also noticed, even though I think some composers are so good in notating things, and I know it's your job to do that, and I know you teach it and all that, and I also still think there are things you cannot notate, and so I'm also feel very privileged that singing contemporary music, I can talk to you and we can figure it out together, or you tell me what else is in this music. And
yeah, no, definitely.
And you already mentioned that you studied in Freiburg. How was it then for you coming to Germany, or what are the differences or the common things between Spain and Germany or the music scenes in both countries?
It was just such an important experience. It was just a completely life-changing experience to come to Freiburg. To be honest, I just didn't compare it so much with Spain. I just completely tried to absorb every day as much as possible. I was completely delighted to have that opportunity. It was a jolly time. It was really a very, very good time. And I'm just so thankful that I encountered this. I had really good teachers, Cornelius Wehr, Matthias Spallinger, and later on in Cologne, Johannes Schönhorn. And plus all the environment of those Hochschulen with, like I was telling you before, the first opportunities to really work together with some of the students and develop both those friendships and also the work together. And it was an incredibly formative experience. And so formative, not only musically, but in a way of understanding the world. And I guess I did understand better Spain in that sense. It's not like I left it behind, but I did feel closer also in some ways to Spain also after leaving, not in a nostalgic way, but it's true that things like music, like flamenco and all, continued playing a very important role in my life after departing, maybe even more seriously than before. And through comparison, it's just a very basic but very useful way to learn in life. So yeah. It's also fantastic that I don't know for how long, but in Germany, to start being aware back then of the grounds for the possibilities of the existence of new music. How is that possible at all? The power of the radio also, no? And the role that it played also in the development of new music, all those orchestras. But music was something accessible, and that, I don't know, one could go to an opera house as a student for 10 euros. Or how was that possible that social state permitted also the existence of such experimental art and music and network of so many people making music in so many different ways? That was very, I think it is actually very, very special to Germany and maybe some other Central European countries, but not so common elsewhere. But I also learned to appreciate much more that first education that I was referring to, like the access to music, public funded access to music from an early age in Spain is actually wonderful. And I didn't appreciate it so much back then. Like usual, no? Like one gives it for granted and it is nothing is granted, no? So yeah, it would be nice to take all the best from every place and bring it together, but not so easy. Yeah. Also, the experience of living in a different language was very, very enriching. Like, I think in that sense, it was good to start in Freiburg because I've heard from many colleagues in Berlin that it's really not that easy to learn German when everyone answers in English impatiently. So really to just dive into the language was quite an experience also. And yeah,
I'm sure that when we already talked about language that you also, I feel very different when I mean, now we're speaking English and I'm a native German and I love speaking English, but I feel different when I speak English than when I speak German or any other language. I think it also changes you somehow because every language has their whatever own flow and energy and melodies and also words, like the words that exist in some languages and some languages they don't even exist because they don't even think about this.
It's a different person. Yeah. There is a funny, and I mean, I don't know how funny is that, but I found it funny that that Granada and Freiburg are partner cities. So when I walk by the Rathaus in Freiburg, the town hall, there is a sign of Granada on the floor. I was like, huh, so if one jumps there three times, it's a tunnel too. Yeah, no, but
And the other thing I'm also curious is also maybe looking at both countries, I mean, you were a woman composer. Was it easy for you or was it challenging?
I mean, being a woman in general, not a woman composer, is challenging in today's world. That is the case. It's not an opinion, I believe. It's the case. If your question is more towards the difference between Spain and Germany, it is quite complex. Actually, it's interesting. It's full of contradictions because, on the one hand, I would say that this kind of also times have changed, luckily, a lot. When I think back, which I try not to do much about my first period of studying composition in Spain, really horrible things in the environment there. There were some good things, of course, that's what I try to refer to when I talk about it. Like I also had a very good teacher there, Pedro Guajardo, but the environment was so extremely macho. But then law-wise, Spain is quite advanced, I must say. I didn't know until recently that, for instance, the salary gap in Germany is bigger than in Spain. And there is this new law, I think it's pretty recent for the last 2 years or so, the CSC, instead of no is no, it's yes, no for consent. And also transgender law and all is really, really advanced in Spain. So it has this strange mixture of tradition of almost harassment in the street that is really much improved in the last years, and a culture that maybe also promotes that a little bit. But then, so apparently more macho, but then when one looks at the facts, there is also a lot of energy put to fight against that, which is maybe not always the case in northern countries, where maybe more has been achieved earlier, and then there is this kind of, I don't know. These are all too big generalizations, of course. Yeah, but there is a lot to do. There is a lot to do still. Like,
have you found it challenging for yourself, or were you just lucky?
I don't think one really can say as a composer only, because it is challenging to be a woman in this world. And I experienced things in my life that I don't think is there. Maybe one day I will share more publicly, but I don't feel like doing it like this. But I have experienced real life-threatening experience even. So it is, and I wouldn't have experienced them when I have been a woman. So I cannot just say, it shapes your life to be a woman. And if you read the UN reports about equality, there's still such a long path for women to be one of the main, to talk about equality, I guess one of the main challenges would be to have more women on leading positions. And in order to achieve some kind of equality there, I think the reports say that we need at least like more 125 years or something like that to achieve some kind of more balanced outlook on that. So yeah, and as a composer, it's been generally I think the new music, I mean, the music world is still backwards, I think, compared with other fields like the arts. And we have, okay, now in this new role that I have since August as head of the mastering composition in Bern, I'm very much aware of this, because I really care to provide or contribute somehow to have a healthy environment and a secure environment for everyone and a non-discriminatory environment. Exactly. But it is challenging. I mean, I have really great colleagues, but maybe because it is just so, there is so many things to be done in the everyday. When one looks back at the guests over the past years, they rarely had any women composers. So now I feel like, not because I am a woman, I think I would have done the same also as a man, because it's really a matter of everyone, no? But one of my first duties here is to try and bring in some more equality in that sense. And yeah, we don't have so many references, I think, in an older generation. Like for me, and I'm not calling her old because she's not yet that old, but encountering people like Haya Chernobin has been completely really, really important in my life as a young composer. I think I was 21 when I first met her at Schloss Solitude, and I don't know if she knows herself how, not only because she's a woman, but that's only one big part of it. One needs references, right? And I've seen that also with my own students when I was studying back in, or when I was studying, not teaching back in Zaragoza, I was also the only woman in the department. And they came up to me to share all kind of very difficult experiences that were, I mean, many students can have difficult experiences during their studies. And also our field is a field that has this intimacy, no? I mean, this one-on-one teaching, and that can lead very easily to power relationships and abuses. But in that environment, it's often the women who have most problems. So...
And is it now that a lot of women also come to you to study with you?
Well, I'm just brand new here, so I don't know. We'll see for the new entry exams. But it's interesting. Right now I have 7 male students. And I think, I don't know how much of that is just happened like that. But from the enrolled students in our program right now, those who come with a background of notated music are men, because our program is quite open. Actually, we also have performer composers and composers also more based on notated music or not, and we have quite a few women, but they're all performer composers, and for some reason the, let's say, score based composers are, or those who already had a diploma on composition, are those who chose me. And right now I have 7 male composers. So yeah, I do encourage more women.
But that's nice. They will be then very aware and find men.
What is that? Sorry, I didn't understand.
When they study with you, they will become very aware and find men, and that's good.
Well, you know what? I'm a mother of a boy. So When I heard about the gender during the pregnancy, my first thought was, okay, this is now, he's not going to be an asshole. This is actually what I thought. And recently I've actually read a book by an Iranian-German journalist, Sheila Bayat, who actually thought the same. And this is so interesting. I think it is... Somehow, in the end of the day, it's of course not my responsibility, either as a mother or as a teacher, no? But of course, we can contribute. This is also, as a mother, of course, obviously. And for young adults, we also have definitely some influence. And in the end of the day, that's also like the basics of politics, right? An exchange and a dialogue. And of course, not. I don't aim to bring in my ideology here, but... But if I can at least contribute to have a healthy and a fair environment, I think that's also part of my duty, as big as a duty, or maybe bigger than helping these young composers to write better scores.
Yeah, I got more and more aware, especially by talking in this podcast with all those composition people, also composition teachers, professors, that... Yeah, your lessons are so holistic. And I mean, I think now voice lessons became also more holistic. But when I was studying voice, it was just the only important thing was my voice. Nobody cared anything else about me, how I felt, or if it was easy or difficult, it was challenging me. And when I hear you sometimes talk about composition classes, I'm kind of jealous. I'm like, oh, I should take that too. Sounds great. Yeah, but this is how it is. And I mean, you're composing, you're teaching, you're a mother, and you're doing so many things. Do you have a certain approach how you structure your day, or do time management, or are you more like the free-floating person, or do you have any advice for us what works especially well for you?
Well, this is really challenging right now, because I literally feel like I have, like I'm 3 people in one. it's very challenging to find a balance there. I don't think one can even talk about priorities or compare motherhood with being a composer, because it's a, I mean, one cannot prioritize that. It's just like two completely different things. And I just know I have to, I just want to do it as good as possible, but it is, I think I have to accept that it is basically impossible to do the three things to the up to the standards that I imagine. So I think one helpful thing is maybe to really focus on the present. So for instance, not to think about what am I missing from my child right now while being in Ben, or how am I not putting him to sleep or whatever, or also not to be thinking about how am I not composing right now while I'm playing with him, but really try to enjoy also, not just focus and do the best at every moment, but also try to enjoy it. Like when I'm teaching, not try to think, oh no, I have this deadline and I just want to go home and finish, because then what's the point? It's not going to help me or the student that I have in front of me. And actually that sort of, so to say, new knowledge came to me through my son also, that at some point early on, I left to the side as much as I could that kind of pressure. And I just really completely allowed myself to just play again and enjoy it also. And think, no, these next 3 hours, I'm here playing. And that's not so much of an advice, but I think in a way it helps to just see the present, be very, very much at the present, and try not to, because those thoughts about what one should be doing, that definitely doesn't help.
No, not at all. But I think if I mean, your child taught you to be in the present moment, I mean, you're a hero for me.
Yeah, but then of course, lack of sleep. I'm not as good with lack of sleep like other friends who I admire, but also I admire them, but then I also know how much they suffer. Like I also, this is why I really don't want to romanticize that. Like for a long while, I was really like reassuring this very good friend of mine I was telling you about, this poet, because she would tell me, no, I just don't sleep at night. I just, when my son sleeps, I write. And I used to think like, wow, I thought, why? Maybe I don't like music as much because that doesn't keep me awake. I need to sleep also at some point. But no, I mean, my friend, after 3 years of this kind of sustained attempt to be a mother and to continue writing, she also fell sick. So I think we also should try to not romanticize in general what we do. In that idea of the perfect mother, the perfect composer, is the perfect composer a caricature of a genius? And we actually don't know how Beethoven really was. It's like I think this image of the romantic genius did so much harm to everyone in so many senses.
Yeah, I'm glad that we're letting go of so many things that cause us pressure, how we should be, and all that, and that we can let go, and maybe it's different or easier.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, we're all in the process and trying to figure it out somehow.
Yeah, and do things both with joy and with respect. Like, I really love this gesture that they do actually with not so much ceremony. As I mentioned before, I do learn Indian music since 2012 or so. And when I have lessons with my Guruji, with my teacher, I basically spend the day there with them, with him and his family. And they really, without a lot of, it doesn't look so ritualistic, but they do light up a candle for the goddess Saraswati, the goddess of music. And they do small puja, or basically, but if not the puja, at least they do light up the candle. And by the sunset and sunrise, like before they start practicing. And I think it's a good way of reminding oneself that the music is there, floating, let's say, and I'm going to be respectful both towards myself and towards, because it's, in the end, it's your time, right, that you are spending in this way, and towards the music itself as an abstraction. I really love that, to think, okay, I'm just going to at least try to be focused and do what I do with purpose, and with that being there very much as attentive and sensitively as possible. So that generally in life, I guess, is a good thing to keep in mind. Not always possible, because we're always reminded of what's to come, no? But anyway.
And I mean, we kind of touched it already, but what does it mean for you to be true to yourself or authentic in this music business? And how do you keep true to yourself?
Okay, so I think the words music and business should be as much as possible separated, because really those are two different things. One thing is music and one thing is business. And I think no one is going to do a great deal of a business with music anyway. So I guess it's more a question really of survival. And I also feel now the responsibility of trying to also accompany to a certain extent also these young composers in their path. And it's not easy because there is not one path, right? After studying composition and entering the professional world, I think one should really remain true to oneself. And that's easier said than done. I see now sometimes it's really good to be, again, to be teaching, because it connects me again also with some memories also from that period of my life. And I do remember the urgency of finding my voice. And at some point, I did forget about that. And I think then is when I started finding my voice. But I do understand. I do understand why they're desperately looking for that, because they very early on understand that if they are not very peculiar and unique, it's such a hard field anyway that they are not going to make it. But one just needs so much time to develop. There are no shortcuts. So I think this is a bit of a, I don't know if it's a funny thing to say, but somehow it should not be too goal-oriented. The goal should be just that discovery itself. But of course, it does not sound very pragmatical, what I'm saying. But I do believe that the true development in music has to happen in that way. It cannot be forced. And then one has to, as a parallel activity, so to say, also find ways. And that's really, really challenging. And I have the feeling it's going to become even more challenging in the future. I don't want to be pessimistic, but I think we still have here in Switzerland or Germany quite a few opportunities for young artists, state-funded also, like residencies. But I mean, they are all in danger. Like, see all this recently, these cuts announced by the Berliner Senat. I don't know what's going to happen actually if all that falls apart, because I think there are still things in our society which should remain unproductive. Otherwise, I don't know. I don't know how it would look like if everything what we humans do has to have that kind of fake reason of existence of productivity and profit. So, yeah, this is why I think one should remain also active, not only in their own table and at the desk and composing. And of course, that needs its own space and peace and focus, but one should remain active as a citizen also in whenever political interventions we can have, not only voting but also in exchange with others. And but I don't think there is like a business model to be followed here. I think one should really just be very honest and spend a lot of time with music and be a little patient and not force things. And then there's this other parallel very hard path to figure out, which is how to support oneself, no, financially.
And what does then success mean for you?
I don't really know, actually. I don't really know. For us, I guess in music making is very particular, because we do need the other, unless a writer, right? As a writer, one can have a life project of your work. I don't fully believe that one can do that in isolation, because it drinks back from the world and your experiences and how the language itself develops. We don't speak the same as 10 years ago. That's also an interesting thing going back now for the holidays in Spain. Every time I'm back, I see some slightly different expressions that are trend and they don't even notice that they do that. No? Is language is also in constant evolution. But no, but in the case of music, we of course need the as composers, although there are of course many performer composers, including in our school, but which is interesting. Some students see that as a disadvantage to be dependent on others. And I see it as a wonderful opportunity. So success would be, I guess, to, but that's again something that one cannot force. But I think one is successful if maybe has, and this doesn't happen also just by chance, but by being very much there and aware and open, I guess, some kind of openness that allows to develop those relationships to others that the music is in the end able to stand there. No? And success, I don't know what, I don't know if what is really anerkennung, like, how do you say that in English? Like
acknowledgement or appreciation.
Yeah, I don't know. We will go back to the question of also the audience in new music, because it's also such a particular audience. I think there is some kind of inner peace that one knows and feels if one feels it's in the correct path. I would associate that to success, actually. But of course, there are so many elements to take into account there. Yeah, I cannot really answer that question. many artists whose work we consider really a canon nowadays were miserable as human beings. So I don't know if that's a success. So hard to say.
And is there anything that drives you forward, or do you have a vision?
Yeah, definitely. It's a very kind of invisible vision. But one, I do definitely feel something. It's like a thread pulling there. No? I think there's an interesting moment in the development of a composer. I don't know if other colleagues would share this experience with me. As a student, I guess one wants to discover the world every time with a new piece, right? And there is some moments in life when, at least it happened to me, that I started seeing the sisterhood of my pieces. I started, like, maybe I was about to finish writing one piece. I don't remember which one that was. And then suddenly I understood there was a sister piece and another piece. And then this is, I guess, when one starts realizing that without looking for it, one has started to develop a language, or that one is actually living in that music. So I do believe that I am a better composer, since that is being also a parallel development of becoming a better listener, actually. And listening is a very big part of my everyday practice. Like, this is also why I think transcribing has played an important role also as a kind of an exercise of focusing and listening very much into details and developing certain tools and maybe only extracting one part of what I was listening, like some kind of like partial listening within the listening, and like all kind of sub elements there. So I have a vision, but I think it's a bit delicate to talk into detail about it, because I think one can feel it. But again, like the development advice that I would give for young composers, I don't think that I have I can see where it is going, but I don't really know it yet. It's like also, there is this analogy that many times also Indian musicians I've heard using, is like learning a raga or learning music in general. I think it's like learning a person also. And a person has many facets. And maybe for a painter, I don't know, after 2-3 meetings, can do a proper sketch of how that person looks like, even without having that person in front of her. But maybe it's that person only in one context, and this person eventually behaves in a different way in another context. So, and I don't know, if I have a relationship with someone, I assume that both that person and I will change. So I also couldn't, I can maybe imagine, for example, I was telling you about the beautiful friendship with my friend, the poet. I can very well imagine that in 10 years it will remain a very strong friendship. But I cannot exactly, and I can have a vision of that relationship in the future, but I cannot exactly say how it will be. And I think that's also the case with music. And I think it's good generally, it sounds a bit esoteric maybe, but it's good to embrace the unknown. It brings us back to being a bit, and I don't mean with that because I, okay, there is a contradictory element here, because I very much assimilated in Freiburg this idea of working in a way counterintuitively, because our intuition could lead us many times to just like the very classic dramaturgy paths or developments. And it's very, very good, I think, to be aware of how unconsciously we just have in our DNA all the shapes and the weights of the tradition, right? But then I think once one has spent more time with their own music also, it's good sometimes to abandon oneself to that unknown kind of territory and to be actually happy about that, about not playing with that and staying there, not necessarily with that intention of being always deciphering things, but enjoying actually the veil.
Wow, this is great. Wow. We're actually at the last question, and my last question for you is, which tip would you like to give young artists?
Yeah, well, in the end, we've been talking about young artists quite a bit. So, and again, yeah, I don't want to sound here like too idealistic, because I know, but again, like you were asking, how is it being a woman composer? And I think this question really leads back to how is it being a woman and young artists. It's like really young people, no? I think it's both, like, there is this tip that also one of my teachers, Matthias Spalinger, told me once, which is like, wake up in the morning and really do whatever you really want to do. And if that's composing, then just go to the desk and compose, and only leave the desk if the revolution comes knocking to the door or something like that. But so I think it's a strange mixture between both that kind of, I think, okay, this is important. This point is, I think, that was important for me to realize at some point. It's more, and I have to find now the English word for that, like an offer. More an offer that trying to impose something to the music. Yeah, this is the funny thing between languages. I wanted to convey that I think that it has both this, for the young artists in general, having this determination to really focus respectfully, being respectful towards music and towards yourself in that commitment, let's say, but at the same time being aware as much as possible of the world. And because I think otherwise it's just not possible. It's formulated in a way that sounds egoistic. If we don't have this political exchange, the space left for the arts in the state will disappear. But it's not only the space left for the arts. The space left for the arts happens to be, as I said before, one of the few non-profitable spaces, right? And it will shape the way we live. So, and again, music is a space of exchange. So we should also be aware of how livable we're doing that space and how respectful also we interact with each other in that space, so that it's also a reflection of the world we want to live in. And then, yeah, I think then aesthetically, so to say, or in not aesthetically, but in their own development, it helped me to change a bit the perspective that I'm not trying to force this music into something that defines me or into something that helps me find that job or helps me get that commission. But it's the other way around. It's like I am in this role more of rendition, so to say, of serving, you know, and giving something. So, and maybe then music will start to to manifest, so to say, or to arise, or to, yeah, yes, yeah. I hope I could more or less express what I wanted to say with that. Not imposing.
Yeah, Irina, I thank you so much for this wonderful talk today. And yeah, I hope to meet you someday.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Not just your wonderful Spanish colleagues.
Yeah. Yeah.
And thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you. And please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irina.